Welcome to Creative Disturbance.
Rencontre avec.
Rencontre avec.
Meeting.
Meeting.
Louise Whiteley.
Mel de Pierga.
So Louise, you're an associate professor and a curator here at the Medical Museum in Copenhagen, and Malte, you're an assistant curator at this same museum. So this May 2016 and until August, the museum is hosting Heirloom, an artwork by Gina Czarneski and John Hurt, part of a Trust Me, I'm an Artist project, which is a project co-funded by Creative Europe program. But this work by Gina Czarneski is also part of a Body Collected exhibition, which is a larger exhibition here at the museum. So maybe could you start explaining what the museum is and what the Body Collected exhibition is?
So Medical Museum is a combined interdisciplinary research unit and museum for the history, present and future of medicine and the cultures of medicine. So we have a very large historical collection of medical artefacts, which continues to grow as our collectors and curators make new acquisitions from the contemporary world of biomedicine and medical research, and as we work with artists and sometimes are able to acquire some of their works into the collection as well. So it's a living, growing collection about the cultures of medicine from the past and into the future. And we have researchers from a huge range of disciplines here, from philosophy to museum studies, contemporary media studies, and so on, who get involved with making exhibitions and events and analysing them as part of their research.
Within the museum, you have specific exhibitions. So to speak, you have exhibitions within the large museum collection, and the Body Collected is one of those. So could you explain what is this exhibition and what the goals and aims are?
So it was the newest, biggest exhibition we made and opened in May 2015, and it's about how medicine has collected human tissue over the last 200 years, how you gain knowledge from this sort of material. So we're looking at how doctors dissected, cut open the body, how they removed layer upon layer to gain knowledge about our anatomy, how they put the samples into microscopes, how we are grown in petri dish, how we're looked at and now in computer systems to sequence our DNA. So the exhibition The Body Collected is also an exhibition about a sort of scale. So we're going down through the body in smaller, smaller parts. We start with the whole body, in this case fetuses and babies from our collections, who taught midwives and obstetricians how to gain knowledge about the birth before you had x-rays, before you had ultrasound and that sort of thing. And then we move down the scale to organs, down further to the microscopes, as to small slides of human tissue, then to cell cultures, and then at the end to the molecules of DNA.
Just me. I'm an artist.
Within this, connected, so to speak, to this Body Collected exhibition is the work Heirloom. So could you describe this work?
So in Heirloom, Gina Czarneski is a British artist who's worked for some years with human bodily materials in her artworks, aiming to raise bigger questions about our relationship to biotechnologies and the biotechnological industries. Decided to grow portraits of her daughters from their own cells. So she created a beautiful glass cast of their faces via very traditional casting methods using dental alginate, plaster, silicone and glass. And then sampled skin cells from the insides of their cheeks and their eyelashes, a very non-invasive method. And then collaborated with Professor John Hunt, whose specialism is in biomaterials and how we can grow human materials for reimplantation into the body to deal with disease and injury. To find out a way to grow and proliferate those cells in a way which would allow them to be grown over the glass cast to produce living and then preserved portraits of her daughters. So one of the things which has been interesting about this for us is the way in which the artistic and scientific goals and constraints intersect and interwove to produce the work itself, and the combination of practicality and aesthetics that kind of cocktail or alchemy produced in ways which neither of them or us as the museum had predicted or expected at the start. But to give a bit of a picture of how that scientific artistic experiment sits in the exhibition and what you actually see, what I've just described with the glass faces having the cells grown over them in the exhibition is manifested as two glass bioreactors. So bioreactors are just essentially glass boxes which are sealed, so they're sterile. And inside the two glass boxes are the two glass faces surrounded by the cells, which are suspended in a liquid which feeds the cells. It contains antibiotics and the right balance of gases. And then within the case that holds the bioreactors, we also have a heart bypass pump, which basically serves to keep the liquid circulating, to keep the cells healthy and everything moving around. So what we could have done was just to display this case containing the bioreactors and the living faces. But for Gina and John, this work has developed over many years. So the process of even producing the glass faces, developing the scientific method, and then thinking about what happens when you come to the end of that experiment and you've got all of this skin in the bioreactors, or skin-like layers in the bioreactors, and you want to get it out and either preserve it and display it as a kind of subversive portrait, or in the future potentially use that for medical purposes. And then thinking further into that medical future, if we wanted to move this out of a unique one-off artistic experiment and make it part of our medical system, what would be required? And one of the things they're thinking about there is the use of 3D scanning, which could potentially be done ubiquitously and then added to biobanks along with samples of cells and DNA to make this combination of the macro 3D shape of the body and the micro cellular materials of the body be combined in order to produce reconstructions or cosmetic modifications. So they had this interest in this whole spectrum from the production of the artwork into its possible futures. And we decided in the exhibition to exhibit that rather than just exhibit what you might kind of classically think of as the artwork on a plinth. So we have a kind of a process, a material physical process in the exhibition. And importantly, that sits alongside a documentation video and a projection which shows the girls, Gina's daughters, whose cells are the heart of this exhibition, and some sense of what it was like for them to participate in this process.
What were the specific issues in you encountered in exhibiting a quote-unquote a living artwork and growing cells within a museum welcoming an audience and a wide public as compared to the dead artifacts?
Well, the first thing that hits me when we started this process was the practicalities of the things, actually. Just keeping it alive and watching the temperature, adjusting the heaters, making sure everything was running smoothly and wasn't bubbling too much, was there too little food, too much food. That sort of practicality we're not used to that we have to watch everything so carefully. I mean, of course, we're mindful of every object in our exhibition, but this is just so different that we have to go in on a Sunday and a Saturday to check if it's still alive. So that was definitely different. In terms of how it relates to our, well, quote, normal way of displaying human tissue, well, the difference was, and we were a little bit prepared for that, is that this level of human tissue doesn't affect people so much as the babies or the fetuses does and the skeletons does. Because even though it's maybe might be more relevant to their future, the cells and the cultures and the DNA, it doesn't speak so much to our identity or to our feelings. And it's been the same with the Body Collected exhibition. The experience we had, that people react, of course, to the fetus in the bottles and the misshaped babies, of course. But the thing that relates to them, all the biobanks, the sampling of their tissue, the future use of their tissue, you don't get that reaction so much. So that, I think that's also what Heirloom sort of battles with, if you want to say that word, because it's very personal, it's the daughters, but at the same time it's on a cellular level that people have a hard time relating to.
And do you think that it's more difficult to exhibit body parts today of dead people than it was before?
So one of the interesting things for me about coming to Denmark to work in this museum as a British person was to see the difference in the cultural responses to showing body parts and dead materials, long before we got to this project and started thinking about living materials as well. And I know that in the UK and also in Sweden, which is really just across the water from Denmark, there's been much stronger cultural responses to showing dead tissues and parts of persons' bodies. As you say, there were people behind these things, and we can lose sight of that when we display them. But in Denmark, there seems to be a feeling that these are things which were used for knowledge and they still have a lot to teach us. And if you treat them with respect and care, then why should they not be available for a wider population as well as the doctors to see them? And I think that's partly a cultural response and it's partly a regulation response. There is less regulation in place, so we don't have the Human Tissue Act in Denmark, so you're not prevented from showing these things. So it's then very much up to the institution to know its context, its audiences, how these things might be received, and what to judge appropriateness. So to come to the trust me, I'm an artist, there's more of a kind of trust me, I'm a museum.
I can only talk for medical museum or for body collected or the process of displaying this, where we're of course very mindful about the fact that there is people behind every medical collection. There are people has to die to become part of the collection, of course. And of course it's a conundrum because it wasn't very relevant for the doctors at the time to collect sort of the identity behind the specimen. That was the disease or how they die was probably interesting in terms of medicine, look at the object, but who they were was not so important. So it's always been a sort of challenge to figure out how do we display identity in these cases. And we have one specimen that is specifically interesting in this case, which is the conjoined twins, which we know we know their names, Martha and Maria, because there was a doctor who wrote about them in the 1884. There we have an page long description of how they were born, how long they lived for 10 days, could they react separately, were they two beings and stuff like that. And that gave us like a small glimpse into the identity of people. And we brought that forward and sort of pointed to the fact that even though this is hardcore science teaching medical student, there's also, of course, persons involved in these collections. And that was the challenge with the old stuff. The challenge with the new displaying the new cases like the cell cultures and the blood samples was also a challenge of regulations. That, I mean, there's the interesting challenge that there's not really so much regulation in Denmark with the old collections, so we had to sort of make our own ethical framework for displaying it. But with the new materials like blood samples and cell culture, it's regulated, of course, so we can't access it that easy. So in some cases, we end up taking blood samples from ourselves so that we could display something of that collection that doctors use and medical scientists use today, because it's so regulated we couldn't get access to it. And there's sort of like an unbalance in those.
And that brings us right back to heirloom, where again, it's a sense of not exactly self-experimentation, but child experiment.
Yeah.
So as you and another curator had to take samples from your own bodies in order to bypass those concerns, in a sense, in heirloom, there's a similar thing going on. So that's one way, of course, that artists have always been able to circumvent some of these questions. But you're talking about how we can find identity in the contemporary biobank part of the exhibition. That's also, in a sense, what heirloom does. It insists on the identity of the cells, right? It surrounds them with their facial image. It's like these cells are of this person, they come from this person. And then when you learn that the cells have been grown over months and months and replicated, and how far are they actually from the person who gave them, it kind of really points to some of those questions that we also raise in the biobanking part of the exhibition. As Malte says, he raises this debate which came up in the ethics debate about heirloom at the Museum this week, which is where's the line between presenting issues for discussion and shaping that discussion? So when you curate an exhibition with body parts, or when you develop an artwork and for display with an artist, how do you feel about those issues, and how is that communicated in the thing you put on for people to interact with? And of course, context shapes all responses, as you raised earlier, are we in a museum? Are we in an art gallery? Are we in an anthropological collection? And people have expectations. And I think a lot of that is also to do with what you assume about the ethical standing of the professionals who deal with those materials. So we have many ways in society of having quick heuristics or markers for judging other people. So if someone is a professor of science, we assume they will do science correctly, and that in a sense relieves us of the need to go and check, are you a good person? Do you care about your materials? Will you treat them correctly? Because we use those heuristics. And of course you walk into a museum and there's all kinds of heuristics that these people here must care well for objects because they're curators. So I think we should always be aware that those things are there and be kind of feel a sense of responsibility for living up to those expectations. But to some degree, you just can't control what happens when people meet these kinds of materials. And you could say that in both The Body Collected and Heirloom, we don't put these ethical questions up on the walls in so many words. We present the possibilities and the ambiguities, and we leave gaps, and we invite people to bring themselves to those questions.
Just me. I'm an artist.
What struck me in this conversation is that you said you had to use your own blood sample to put on the show, because even if Denmark does not have a huge regulation, you couldn't display the blood samples as you wish, which in a way is an ethical issue, because how can a curator in this case use his own body material ethically in an exhibition? Because you are part of a social system, you are part of an institution with somebody who is your boss, with pressure, with a normal power game within an institution. This is highly non-ethical to use your own blood. And it's ironic that in the Danish society, you're not able to get one from the biobank. So how would you feel about that? What is your comment?
Well, it's also part of the regulations and the ethical walls are just there for a reason in these cases. So as much as we would like to display the correct sample, the right sample from the proper sample from a biobank, there's also a reason why we can't get hold of it. And that is the trust issue with the scientist. If people can donate or get sampled to biobanks, then they also have maybe an unwritten rule that they will be used for scientific purposes and for medicine tests and scientific research, and not to be displayed in a museum. That is okay. I mean, that is why we are showing this as a progress of collections. In terms of the pressure from above or donating yourself, your own blood to the exhibition, of course it's a bit dodgy, of course it is. Because you could always comment on how, okay, was there a pressure, or would you? I mean, in my opinion, it was an honor to be this young and displayed at an exhibition. Mm-hmm. But it's also, it gives a personal angle to talk about this topic.
So I think we have developed also a kind of sensitivity to what are we doing with our body parts, mm-hmm. and part of ourselves that we would normally don't make so much a fuss about it. And it's probably because biomedicine has reached a point where certain things are possible.
So I was thinking again about this question you asked about the contrast between an ethical machineries in place, which meant that we couldn't display a sample from the biobank in the exhibition. So instead, two curators decided they would like to place their own samples in the exhibition as a way around that. And you ask, is that in a sense more ethically problematic than having a sample from a biobank? But the machinery says one is not okay and the other is. It's really important to think about judging individual instances versus why they occur. So the systems are there for a reason, as Malte said earlier. We can challenge whether they're set up in the right way and whether they need to evolve and change in the future. But there are reasons we have this legislation. And if we say that in this funny paradox you mentioned, it seems like that was just the wrong way round, that it should be seen as more ethically problematic to do the less ethically problematic thing. But in a sense, those little chinks or windows into how the system is in some ways broken can give you guidance into how to think about changing it, I think, rather than to get all like, oh, it's so annoying, we're being like cut off at every point by legislation, which is there for good reasons. But that doesn't mean we should see it as a monolith that can't be challenged and changed. And I think that's one of the things which Trust Me, I'm an Artist is able to do, is kind of reveal that these things are not monoliths. They're also made by people with particular views and agendas, and they are open for change, for society to think about. So, for example, should these donation forms, which are very highly formal and in very, very many ways dry, and people don't even really read them, should they include a disclaimer about that this material might be used in a museum or artwork? That's a question we could discuss. And I know that Anna Dimitri, for example, has had this in very specific projects where people donate to research and to the possibility of being part of an artwork. So by finding these paradoxes and chinks, we get ideas for what could be different.
And my last question will be for personally, for each of you, did you encounter, by putting together those exhibitions, things that made you uncomfortable, that where you ask yourself, should I do that, or how should I do it, or not?
So for me, it's also important that exhibitions don't stand alone. So as with Heirloom and the Trust Me, I'm an Artist events, we have writings about them, we make podcasts about them, we have public events about them. There's an exhibition catalogue which raises some of the issues about identity and categorisation that come up in the exhibition. So that there's many ways you can keep the discussion about ethics going beyond the actual production of the thing itself. And I think that's a really important part of the Trust Me, I'm an Artist project.
I think as a work hazard, get a little thick skin with these kinds of things. Been working around with this, with human tissues or displaying organ skeletons and babies for the last 3 years, so it's hard to get shocked by it. I think there was I could feel a personal reaction when I saw the girls on the video, for sure, because that's as personal as it gets. Then you see, like, then you just get a good reminder that there's people behind the artwork, not just the ones who made it, but actually these two teenagers right now. So that was powerful, I think.
I think for me personally also, it would have been very different if this had come to us in 2 years and Gina and John had finished it and exhibited it many places and then it was arriving in a box ready to go. It was actually, this was a process where we got to know Gina. She came to the museum, she saw our collections, we heard her responses to our materials and we heard about her daughters. So in a sense that my comfort with the exhibition and what we were doing is also based on a kind of a virtue ethics of the artist, of knowing the artist and trusting their practice. And I think it's also important to say that the issues of consenting one's children to be part of an artwork, I think, are actually intimately connected to all kinds of issues of parenting in general. These are not unique to making art with your children's cells from their cheeks. They're about all kinds of ways we represent and shape representations of our children and what we want to leave as a legacy in this kind of burgeoning multimedia world.
Des pastilles, ear, à sucer pour l'oreille, candy.